So as I told you, we have a guest yogi with us. This is Dr. Sachin. Dr. Sachin is a doctor, an intensive care doctor at the Global Hospital. He was originally there for a year and a half in 2003, and then he left and did a postdoctorate work and came back in 2010. I believe I was his first patient when he walked on the floor in 2010. He actually remembered what bed I was in, so there you go. I, too, remember what bed I was in 2010. But more important, he's Dadi Janki's doctor, and he tells us the prognosis is good for Dadi to be with us tonight. So that's, yeah, that's great news. So, but he has another specialty, which is he is sort of a natural yogi. He cares a lot about his spiritual life and spiritual practice, and so we have invited him to come and be with us for this next session between now and lunch. And he will keep that same rhythm of moving between talking and then into practice and back to talking. So I think that's enough from me. Welcome, Dr. Sachin.
Good morning, and Om Shanti. Om Shanti. In my childhood, once my father had got a book, and the name of that book was Acres of Diamond. And I started reading that book avidly. It was such a beautiful book. It was written by Dr. Russell Conwell, and the author had narrated one story in that book. And this author, American author, he spoke about this story in his lectures throughout the world for more than 6,000 times. The same story he narrated more than 6,000 times. To be exact, 6,152. So what was that story? It was such a beautiful story. This story tells about a farmer in South Africa. This farmer had a lot of, he had his farm, his garden, his family, everything was there. But once, what happens, a priest comes to his house and that priest tells him about the mysteries of this universe, about how there are some places in South Africa where there are diamonds hidden. And this thing, that farmer gets so much fascinated by this thing that he decides to search those diamonds. And whole night he couldn't sleep. Early morning he gets up and then he sells off whatever he had. And then he goes out in search of those diamond mines. Throughout the life, he keeps on searching those diamond mines. He goes almost to each and every part of the world, but he doesn't get them. At last, he gets frustrated. At last, he gets so much into despair and despondency that somewhere near Spain, he commits suicide and he dies. Dr. Russell Conwell has said that way back somewhere in 1870s, he was making a trip down the Tigris River, and there near Baghdad, one of the guide, he was Arab guide, so that Arab guide told him this story. And Dr. Conwell said, what sort of story is this, that the hero has died? But then he said, there is one more thing to this. Now this farmer had sold that farm to some other person. And this other successor of that farm One day what happens, this other person who had purchased that farm, whilst he was taking his animal near the stream somewhere, the farm, he finds that something is shining there. Something black, and it's shining very brilliantly. So he thinks it might be some stone, so he takes that stone and keeps it somewhere in his house. So that priest, the earlier priest, he comes to see this new owner of the farm, and he sees that black stone there, and he says, "Oh, has that earlier owner come back? Because this is diamond." The new owner says, "This is not diamond. This is just a stone. I got it just yesterday. It was lying there." But that priest says, "I know my life for it. This is diamond. Just take me where you got it." And then that farmer, the new owner, takes that priest to that place. And then there they find, below that stream, there are hundreds and thousands of diamonds there. And Dr. Russell says, this is probably that Golconda mines or Kimberley diamond mines. The first farmer, he searched for the diamond throughout his life. He kept on running from pillar to post here and there. But the diamond mine was there only where his farm was. But he kept on searching and ultimately he died. While this next new farmer, he got to know it about those mines. Why he told this story so many times? Most of the corporate institutions and many other places he narrated this, giving example of science and success and failures and various things. What we are searching actually is somewhere hidden within us. And we are searching that outside somewhere. Dig into your own ground. The treasure is within us. The treasure is within us. It is not outside. We spend our whole life, but to no avail. We meet with failure. Probably that diamond mine, probably that success which we are trying to search outside is somewhere hidden within us. And I would like to begin this session with a very small spiritual activity. In this spiritual activity, we are going to have a small sort of play. As I was talking about treasure or diamonds, we know that the greatest diamonds or the greatest of the treasures are divine virtues. So, the brother will give you, each one of you, one divine virtue, that small card. And what you have to do, I'll just explain to you. You will definitely enjoy this game. Whatever virtue you are getting, just read it once. Think over it. Try to understand what is it. Look into your own life. How much I have imbibed this virtue? For example, if it is compassion, what is the meaning of compassion? What is the exact connotation of this compassion? How can I imbibe compassion in my life? What can I do to increase the spirit of compassion within me? Look at your own life and see, if suppose this virtue had been there in my life in the past, what difference it would have made in my life? Suppose there is some untoward event that happened in the life, or some failure that happened in the past. Just focus on this virtue and think, if suppose this virtue I had, what that situation would have been? And now the brother will keep one chair ahead. Brother, please keep the chair. Before every four individual, one chair would be kept, facing them. And one of you would come and sit on the chair. Sister, please, one of you come and sit on the chair. Yeah. one of you. One chair, one soul in front, and in front of the four people. Just sit on that. Yeah. Before every four, one chair would be there. And one person, please, out of the five, come and sit on the chair. Out of the five, one brother or sister, anybody, please come and sit on the chair. Just keep on thinking about that virtue which you got inside your mind. Keep on churning about that. Anybody? Yeah. For 3 minutes, some music would be played. Just wait. After some time. Every 3 minutes, you have to change the place. Okay? One person is, somebody can come here. If, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now what you have to do, first let us arrange the chair, then I will tell you what we have to do. Okay, done. Now, what you have to do, for 3 minutes, music would be played. Yeah, that's fine. For 3 minutes, music would be played. In that 3 minutes, you have to stay in soul conscious stage. You have to stay in soul conscious stage, and whatever virtue, there would be guided meditation. I would be saying something and you have to focus on those words, and whatever virtue you have got, think about it, and with the same thing you give drishti or vision to the souls who are sitting in front of you. After 3 minutes, you would be changing place. Okay, the person who is sitting on the chair, he would go to his right and sit on this side. And the person who is sitting there would go on that side and that side. And the person on the extreme left would come and sit on the chair. Okay, so you will move like this. Okay, once we start doing it, you will know it. Okay, so let's start the music. For 3 minutes, music would be played. Okay, and there would be commentary on during the music. Sitting in the middle of the forehead. I am a luminous point of light. A purely spiritual being. Complete soul consciousness. Complete stillness of body and mind. I see the virtue, the divine virtue that I got. How much I have imbibed it. In fact, this is my real nature. I am the very embodiment of it. I see my own life, the different stations of my life, how much this virtue has helped me. Can I imbibe it more? Can this virtue become the very part and parcel of my life? how beautiful life would be if I could become the very incarnation of this virtue. Perfect stillness. Right in front of my eyes, I see the soul sitting. Just as this virtue is by my very nature, I see these souls also as the very embodiment of this virtue. I am giving drishti and seeing them in their complete form. See each and everyone, all the three or four souls sitting in front of you. Now slowly, the person who is sitting on the chair gets up and sits on his right side with perfect silence, no sound. The music will change. Now again, the entire hall is suffused with divine vibrations. The song of ecstasy, the divine melody, I bring the virtue which I got in front of my eyes. It's becoming the part of my very being. And I see others also as if they have this virtue in fullness. I feel the vibrations of this divine gathering. Good wishes and pure feelings. How tranquil mind is becoming. What beautiful calmness. The souls are emitting out divine vibrations. I am the very embodiment of the virtue which I got. Change gradually, change the places. Music will change with perfect silence. Get up from your seat and with the same soul consciousness. I am a spark of luminosity. A divine spark. A luminous being. The embodiment of divinity. What a stillness. What serenity is this? The ecstatic music floating in the atmosphere. Touching my very being, the depth of my heart. I see myself and others. With a very, very different vision. I experience the divine fragrance, the divine aroma of this virtue is permeating my being. What a transcendental experience. Again, now change. Get up from your place very slowly. Soundless walk, speechless communication, extreme lightness, the divine virtue. am feeling absence. I am bathing in the ocean of this virtue. The celestial shower of this divine virtue upon me. Permeating my being. I see others as the very embodiment of the virtue I received. Famous German philosopher. His name was Arthur Schopenhauer. And I always love to tell this incident of his life. Once, early in the morning, he got out of his house and went to one garden. And there, since he was a thinker, always thinking about the mysteries of the world, he started talking with himself loudly. It was about 3 a.m. in the morning. And he started muttering with himself. The gardener of that garden, he heard these voices and he came out of his house to find out who is this. He came with a lantern and he came with a stick to find out. And he finds that there's one man who is talking with himself. He thought he might be insane. And he asks him, "Who are you? Where from have you come? What are you doing? What do you want?" 4 things. He asks, "Who are you? What are you doing? What do you want? From where have you come?" Schopenhauer says, these are the same questions I am searching in my life. I want the answers of these same questions and I have yet not got. Who I am? from where I have come, what I am doing, and what I have to do. These are the basic questions. I am trying to find answers to this question from such a long time, and still I have not got the answer. Who I am? A professor, a doctor, an engineer, a mother, a father, or something else? Something beyond? Something more? What is my individuality? What is that real me? Have I lost that? Am I acting in a very phony manner? Phony is a very good English word. It has come from the word telephone. Phony means artificial. When telephone was invented, that time, when somebody would call, they would hear double voice. The second voice was artificial voice. So from there the word phony has come. So these are the questions we are going to explore. Though we know them, we feel we know, but still, definitely somewhere something is amiss. There's one more event in the life of Bernard Shaw. He was traveling from London to some other place by train. All of a sudden, that ticket conductor came and he asked him, "Where is your ticket?" So Bernard Shaw, he started searching. He searched his trouser, he searched his shirt, he opened his bag, luggage, and he was searching like anything, but he was not getting, and he started perspiring. So that TC, he said, "Don't worry, I know you. You are so famous, I know you, you need not to worry. Even if you don't have ticket, please don't worry." So Bernard Shaw says, "I am not worried about ticket. Actually, on the ticket it is written where I have to go. I don't know where I have to go do you know where I have to go?" The person says, "How will I know where you have to go?" So Bernard Shaw says, "The very fact that I came to station, the very fact that I entered the train, it means I must be going somewhere. But the fact that I have forgotten, I do not know." Is it our state also? Where are we heading towards? What do we want in life? One medical scientist, he wrote very good experience in his autobiography. He said, "I have spent my life in atoms and molecules. I have spent my life in researching medicine and diseases and everything. But towards the end of my life, I feel life has slipped through my fingers. Something I have missed." What is that something which is missed? What is that something which is needed? What is that something when we have everything and we still feeling that vacuum, that spiritual vacuum? We have wealth, we have riches, we have position, we have everything of this world, each and every comfort and conveniences, and yet that one particular thing which is missing. What is that? Unless and until the heart is filled with that particular thing, you will not have that sense of fulfillment. And this spiritual vacuum will stay unless and until it is filled with that divine light. Unless and until we understand something more than what is visible, understand something more than what is tangible, understand something more than what is palpable. Is there such a dimension of life? Yes, there is. The very fact that we feel the absence of something in our heart, it means there must be something that should fill it. So, in today's talk, we will answer three questions. First, who am I? Second, whosoever am I, can I still myself? Can I come to that point of calmness? And third, can I know someone whom my heart always wanted to know? Can I know that supreme being for whom I may not, but that supreme always pulled me and I never got to know him? That world may call God or Supreme Soul or whatever names. So coming to the first question, who am I? When I entered medical college and I started reading anatomy, physiology and biochemistry, these are the three subjects in first MBBS, I was always searching for the ultimate truth of life. And I felt we are not just these bodies, and all that is described in these books is everything about bodies. All the diseases, their treatment, their management, investigations, and everything is pertaining to just a lower level. There has to be a higher dimension. What is that higher dimension? I was always searching for this one thing. Throughout the MBBS 4.5 years and then internship 1.5 year, 1 year, I was in continuous perpetual search of the Supreme. But I couldn't get. I used to read books and books after books. Religious books. Every religious book. Sikhism, Buddhism, Hinduism. Inside Hinduism, so many systems, so many philosophies. Used to attend so many, sometimes going to temples, sometimes going to mosques, sometimes going to some other religious places, holy gatherings, trying to sit there and try to understand what these people say. I remember I had been to church for 3 months continuously. Though I am born in a Hindu religion, practicing Hinduism and everything, but still the desire to know the truth was so intense in me that I was restless within to know the ultimate truth of life. Sometimes every one single day I visited new institutions. Every one single day. Whatever institutions they were there in India or abroad, whatever. I didn't go abroad that time. But whatever institutions were there, I used to search. But this question always intrigued me and I couldn't get the answer of this question always. Who am I? What am I? Simply people telling you are soul or you are this or you are that, that they were not satisfying. Actually, if we say that this is me, there are so many barriers, thinking, philosophies, dogmas and so many things. Sometimes knowledge itself, whatever knowledge that is there in books and scriptures and philosophies, that itself becomes the barrier in understanding who we are. Because unless and until all these things, they sit down, they calm down, they are removed, we cannot realize that pure consciousness which I am. And it happened once when I was just sitting in some holy gathering and there was some divine music they were playing that was the path of devotion. Suddenly, during that satsang gathering, I had the experience of total bodilessness. And a divine bliss came upon me all of a sudden. I didn't know what is this, but I realized at that point of time, this is what is me. There was like I was just sitting like this, as if body had gone. Just a point, just a light. That was the first experience. And from that point, I started searching, I started craving for this experience. And I increased my readings and wanderings for the ultimate truth. This was the time I was not attached to this place. Before coming to this place, I think I kept on moving to so many different hundreds of institutions, hundreds of religious books. But I was thirsty and my thirst was never quenched by reading all of them, by going to all of those people. I remember a stage had come in my life that I was thirsty or I will say such a deep yearning to realize who is God. And in that stage, I had entered one church, and sister were there, and they were selling some books. And I went and I asked them, "Do you have any book of Saint Francis of Assisi?" She said to me, she gave me one or two books. And then she sat with me and talked with me for 5 minutes. And later on, she snatched away all the books. She said, "These books are not for you. These books are not for you. It looks from your stage such a deep yearning to realize the truth. Probably you are going to meet God soon." She said that to me long back, when I had not come here, I had no knowledge of this. But she said to me, she snatched away the book and she said that you need not to read this. But it appears as if you are going to meet God soon. I went out from there. So this search was continued. We'll come back to the same, who am I? Before that, one more second question is, how to still this mind? We'll come to the first question again. How to still this mind, or how to still ourselves? I'm going to tell you about 7 different things which I do every day. And unless and until we do all of those 7 things, we are not going to reach here, because there are a lot of barriers here. They don't allow you to be what you are. They appear, they become your obstacles. The first thing is waking and walking. The first thing out of the 7 to still this restless and turbulent mind is waking and walking. Waking up early in the morning, when the atmosphere is so fresh, when the milieu is so energetic, that you experience divine vibrations during that time. Just get up early in the morning and sit down, be still, try to know. And all these questions, who I am, what I have to do, what is the goal of my life, where I am rushing towards, what I have to do in life. Throughout the day, the vibrations change. The atmosphere, the whole worldlings, their negativity and so much things are there in the atmosphere. So it is not very easy to calm the mind. So that's why the first thing is waking and walking. Waking up early in the morning and just sitting still. Waking early in the morning and try to contemplate, try to reflect on some of the basic questions of life. And second, which is very much related to that, is walking. Long walk. Long walk. I remember a British author has written that when he was a youth, once he fought with his father. And the fight was furious, like it was fierce fight. And he said to his father, ultimately, "I don't want to stay in this home. I am going forever." And he leaves his home and starts walking. Because he doesn't have money, he cannot take any vehicle. So he just starts walking, walking, walking. It was the morning time. And he fought with his father the whole night. So he starts walking and walking and walking. And after walking for about 5 kilometers or so, suddenly he realizes, it is my mistake. It is my mistake. It is none of their mistake. Why I am going away? It is me. I should ask for pardon. And he returns back. He wrote that this is the effect of walking. One of the advantages. When you go for a long walk, your mind becomes fresh. Suddenly, that turbulence is calmed down. That impedance which had come, that barrier in your thinking, some blockage is removed. You can sit at your place and you can think, if you have some problem, you can sit and you can think how to solve this problem. This is one way, of course. But once you move out and you start walking, something happens. Some chemical changes happen. And you become so fresh, and probably what you are not realizing during sitting in your room, that point, that thing will come back to you. All of a sudden, a new idea, a new brainchild will descend upon the ground. So first thing to calm the mind, to make this mind tranquil, is waking and walking. Second thing is silence and solitude. Second thing is silence and solitude. I remember in my own life, after my 12th standard, I got to read two books. One was Mahatma Gandhi's autobiography, The Story of My Experiment with Truth, and second book was Love of God by St. Francis of Assisi. I was like a talkative person, like a person who does all sort of mischiefs and everything. My father brought this book, and there was one entrance exam for medical, and that's why you have to read Mahatma Gandhi, because that was a fourth subject besides physics, chemistry and biology. There was one more fourth subject, that was Gandhian thoughts. So I started reading that book and also the other book. Whilst reading these two books, within 3 or 4 days, I went in sudden silence. And my silence persisted for 6 months. In that 6 months, I became so silent, I stopped talking with anybody. My parents were surprised what has happened to him. They thought that he should be taken to some doctor. Why suddenly he has stopped speaking? But a deep internal change came upon me. I started reading and reading and reading, and I felt as if I saw the author's love for God, where St. Francis is saying, the arrow of God's love has pierced me and it is bleeding, the unhealing wound of God's love. I heard such statements for the first time in my life. What is divine love? He is behaving, he is missing his beloved. I read all of those things, and suddenly I felt a deep silence within, and I went into that silence without any planning or anything. Even I remember the day when my 12th standard result came. I had got very good marks and everybody was enjoying, but I was just reading that one statement: the more perfect your patience is, the more perfect you would be. I was very calm and quiet. So second thing to still the mind is silence and solitude, even gross solitude. Because when we are alone, that is the time we talk with ourselves. Otherwise we spend our time in talking with others. There was one German philosopher, Eckhart, long time back. There is an event in his life that once in some woods he was sitting alone, calm. Two of his friends were passing that way, and they thought he is alone, let us give him company. So they come to him and they say, we have come to give you company, since you might be feeling lonely. He said, I was enjoying perfect company, now after you came, now I have become lonely. After you came. Because I was in my own churning, in my own contemplation, in my own divine meditation. After your company, now I have become lonely. So you know, this solitude has got, there are gross solitude I am asking. So at least in the 24 hours, we should have some time where we are silent, where we are in solitude, where nobody is around us, and we are self-talking, contemplating. So that is second. Third is introspection and retrospection. Introspection is to see within. Retrospection is to look behind. So now, this is a very important thing. To see our whole life, what I am doing. What I am doing. We will do a short experiment. Just keep your books aside. Music would be played. And in that music, just sit, relax, but alert. And then, we are going to see our entire life in front of our eyes, right from the childhood till now. So just stay back and sit, relax. in front of my eyes. Today, I am seeing a big screen. This is the screen of my life. I am seeing myself on the screen as a small child. I see my parents. I see my brother, my sister, my relatives. My home is coming in front of my eyes. That's the point whence I started my journey. Now I see my school, my friends. My school life, how I learned language, how I learned different subjects, my college life. I grow up further. I see all the struggles of my life. I see all the conflicts. I see the happy moments and the unhappy moments. I see everything, my whole life. I see my present home, my office, people who are working with me. I see all my relationships. I see the sweetness as well as bitterness, the entire panorama of life. Who I am. Am I lost somewhere? Is this real me? Where is the joy of life? Where is the bliss of life? I just see myself. Om Shanti. So, taking out every day and introspection and retrospection. That is the third point. Fourth point nature and natural things. Nature and natural things. W.H. Davis has written a very beautiful poetry. He says, "What is this life if full of care? We have no time to stand and stare. We have no time to stand beneath the bough and stare as long as sheep and cow. A poor life this is full of care. We have no time to stand and stare. How much time we are spending in the lap of nature. Nature has so much to give us. The music of nature, the chirping of the birds, those streams, those mountains. Have we drifted so much away from nature? Is that the reason for so much restlessness somewhere in our lives? Can we go back to nature? Can we go back to nature's lap? Can we spend some time every day, at least half an hour, sit somewhere and listen to all the things that are around?" There was one Percy B.C. Shelley, once upon a time, that one skylark made him write such a huge poetry, such a beautiful poetry to this skylark. He's talking with that skylark, "Teach me, bird or sprite, what sweet thoughts are thine? I have never heard praise of love or wine that panted forth flood of rapture so divine." He's just talking and talking and talking. Chorus hymeneal or triumphal chant, match would thine would be all, but an empty want, a thing wherein we feel there is some hidden want. "Blithe spirit, bird thou never wert, that from heaven or near it pourest thy full heart in profuse strains of unpremeditated art." Such a divine melody that flows out from the heart. All poets, all artists, all musicians. You know, recently I was listening to one musician, A.R. Rahman. He was asked one question, "How do you compose music?" He said, in answer, "When I have to compose a new music, I just shut out this world. Everything goes out. I just go out from even the consciousness of this body, an entire different platform I enter. And in that stage of the mind, the new music comes to me." Even Michael Jackson has said somewhere, "Then a stage comes while I am dancing, that dance and I become one. I am not no more the Michael Jackson who is dancing, but that ecstasy of dance takes me to such a platform that dance and I become one." You study Picasso. Picasso is said to say that when he used to draw some painting, there were many other people who started imitating him. And there were fake paintings they would be sold in the market. One person once brought, which was painted by Picasso only, and he asked Picasso, "Did you paint this?" The person already knew that this is original painted by Picasso. But yet Picasso said, "No, this is actually painted by me, but this is still not authentic. He said, "Why? Because I have copied myself. This is not authentic in that sense because I have copied myself." So this thing, this newness, this freshness, this creativity comes to the human mind only and only when we go near nature. So spending some time with nature every day. And one more thing I added, nature and natural things. These natural things would be even what we eat. The more and more natural we eat, you will find a new energy, a new joy starts running in your veins. We have drifted away from nature, even from natural food. That is also one of the reasons for so much excitation, for so much passion. That tranquility is missed. This is an important reason for that. The more we go towards nature and the more we go towards natural food, natural habits, whatever that is natural, we become more and more energetic. So this is nature and natural thing. Next is to still this mind. We need deep self-talk. Three things: talking with self, talking with God, and churning knowledge or contemplating knowledge. Anything spiritual, you, as I said, when we develop this habit of talking with ourselves and spending some time, most of the answers come back to us. And also when we develop talking with habit of talking with God, that is the second habit. Many times there are, if you look at the history, people have not known God fully, but still they talked with Him and they got the answers from some invisible source. They got help from invisible source at various stations of their life. So these are the three habits we have to inculcate. One, talking with oneself. Second, talking with the Supreme Power. And third is churning, or what we call as contemplating, divine contemplation, churning the questions of life. This is the one point. How many we finished? Five. Sixth habit, or sixth something that will still the mind, is gratitude and thankfulness. Just to be thankful for everything that you got in life. You know, there is something known as gratitude journal. Gratitude journal. Before sleeping at night, you just write down, thankful to everyone, thankful to each and every person. The very word gratitude carries such a strong positive vibrations that it makes you calm and quiet. The moment you express gratitude, there is a description in the life of Saint Francis of Assisi. At the time of his death, his disciples asked him, do you have something to say? He said, I have to say one thing. Two things. First, I have to thank my body. I have tortured this body a lot. That's why I want to thank and ask for pardon to this body. Because throughout my life, I tortured this body a lot. Lot of penance and so many things. But now I feel in this body only I could love God so much. Because of this body only I had so many divine experiences, I forgot that. Why I am never thanking this body? Always, otherwise we either torture the body or we start keep on grumbling. I have this, I have this, I have this, I have this. This pain, that pain, back pain, headache, and diseases are there of course. But we keep on having a complaining attitude. We see in our OPDs, there are so many patients who are coming. Those patients who are absolutely positive, whatever pain they get, that is relieved quite easily. And those who have already a negative outlook, mindset, about their pain, about their diseases, always complaining, always grumbling, something or other they keep on getting. Because the law of attraction is working. You are creating the same thoughts. They are going in the universe and they are coming back to you. You are saying, I am ill, I am ill, I am sick, I am sick, I am sick. You are inviting those thoughts of sickness to you. So, expressing gratitude. So, Francis de Sales says, I am thankful to my body. Second, he said, I am thankful to my donkey. Because sitting on that donkey only, I could move everywhere. So, he thanked that donkey. Just see. Thanking people, thanking things, thanking everything that God has gifted you in this life generates a positive energy within us. So before sleeping, once, just sit still and just thank God for everything. Or thank existence. Existence is so rich. It has provided me so many things. So I just express a deep sense of gratitude for everything that is around me. This one thing can still the mind, calm the mind, make it more and more tranquil. So, sixth. Seventh thing, what do you think should be the seventh? I want your answers. And every answer would be right, I suppose. Because in this gathering, no answer is wrong. So, what do you think? One particular thing which we should do that can make our mind calm, quiet. Yeah? What? Serenity. But what to do? Means like some action, some deed, something, some habit. Meditation. Let go. It's such a good habit. We are always holding on things. We are catching them. They want to go away, but we are holding on to them. We are holding on and we are stretching. You know, if suppose this wire is there and I hold it tightly, you can see it will become red. My hand would become bruised or red. What is the way out? Let go. Let go. Things are coming, things are going. Why? I am holding them. This is known as holding nature. Things, let them come, let them go. Let bygones be bygones. Don't carry the same. Suppose somebody had not helped me, somebody had insulted me, somebody had not spoken well with me, somebody had plotted against me, somebody had cast aspersions on me, somebody had tried to blame, vilify me, somebody had tried to pull my leg. Something somebody had done. But am I going to carry it all the time? You know, this is something very much related to act of forgiveness also. There was one lady who was sexually assaulted. And she was surgeon. And one day, one person came to her in a very bad shape. He was hit by a bullet. And he was the same man who had done that to her. And she was surgeon. Now it was, she had to decide whether to operate or just to send him away. In the morning prayers, he saw that she was sitting in a church and she saw Jesus Christ. Instead of Jesus Christ, she is standing there on the cross. And Jesus is telling us, just as I have given pardon to all those who did that to me, you also do the same. She had narrated this event. The sense of pardon. Whatever they have done, because so long as we are carrying that grudge within us, we cannot get rid of it. It is for our own self that we need to forgive them. I remember one patient used to come to me. 30 years she was on antidepressant drugs. 30 years she had changed multiple doctors at various places throughout the world. And what was the reason? I couldn't understand. So she revealed, now she was 50 year old, and she told me, and she is also attached to some spiritual institution somewhere outside practicing meditation. She told me in her youth she wanted to marry one person, but her younger sister married that person. And she used to love her younger sister too much. But she couldn't do anything. But that thing stayed in her mind. And that ultimately somatization. And that ultimately turned into depression. And that's why not a single medicine was working. Then in our hospital we taught her this art of forgiveness. Emerge those souls in front of your eyes during morning meditation. Talk with them. And just give them unconditional pardon. Not for their self, their sake, for our sake. Because we are carrying that weight on our heart. Let us forgive them. Because we want to achieve higher dimensions of spirituality. We cannot keep those things in our heart. That hatred, that anger, that ill will, ill feeling. In one sense, we all are one. All our brothers and sisters. So they might have acted wrong. They were under influence of something. That's why they acted like that. We have to become little like an ancestor. Okay? So, let go. Any other thing to still the mind? Tolerate and cooperate. The spirit of toleration. You know, once one truck was going and that truck was carrying some tiles, okay, and some stone, some unbroken stone was there. So they were talking with each other. There was also one statue there in that truck. Many things were there, one statue. So those broken pieces of tiles they were asking that statue, why is it that we were friends, we are from the same stone, and you are, people are worshipping you, but people do not worship us. Rather, they keep us on the floor. So that statue told that piece of tile that when they were putting chisel or hammer, we tolerate it. I tolerate it. That's why I have turned into this beautiful statue, while you broke down. That's why you are there. So this spirit of tolerance. So these are some of the things which we discussed. Now we have 10 more minutes. When the mind is calm and quiet, then only we realize what is God. Who is that supreme being? If you go and study religions, they are so confusing. Each religion says, this is our God and this is His name, this is how He is, and this is, these are the ways you have to practice. I myself, as I said, I visited almost each and every institution, whatever I knew. Studied almost all the religions. And one thing I wanted to tell you, a stage came in my life when I decided in my life that I have to renounce this world. I cannot continue this material life for any longer. I have to renounce. Then only the real God realization or self-realization will come to me. That was the place I reached, a point of my life. After studying and going through all the spiritual gatherings and readings and everything. And then somebody told me, why don't you visit Mount Abu once before going? So that was the point in 2003. And I came straight away in Diamond Hall. Have you seen Diamond Hall? Most of you might have seen, or you would see. In Shantivan down Abu Road, there's a huge gathering. There was a huge gathering. And I straight away came there. I sat in that gathering. I didn't know what is it. I didn't know what is Brahma Kumaris or what is it. I just sat. So I just sat in that gathering and I didn't know what is happening, and suddenly a divine experience. And right now I think we have a surprise of surprises.
Divine experience.
We have with us Dadi Janki here.